Hi, folks. I'm Dakota Cohen. Thank you so much for checking out the Building Your Homestead podcast, where I talk with expert guests about agriculture, health, economics, technology, philosophy, and other topics that I believe will help us to peacefully exit the increasing tyranny of our world and start building a parallel system, one homestead at a time.
Hi everyone, I'm sitting here with one of my favorite people and one of my absolute heroes, Dakota Cohen of Cohen Farm. So we're going to have a really,
cheers
with our raw milk, illegal in Canada.
That's right, yeah.
So I'd like to talk to you today about what you think is going wrong with the regenerative agriculture movement and why we're not as popular as the vegan movement. Well, there's something to that
because we're not
noisy enough.
Plus, we don't have the marketing budget of entire nations behind us.
Yeah,
like the vegan movement does. That's one of the first things.
And we're not telling lies because
exactly,
lies are
yeah.
popular.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
We've got some solutions.
Yeah.
And so, what are our solutions?
So I think the big one we just touched on, which is just there's big money behind veganism, and this has been true for the Criscos and the vegetable oils,
yeah.
And there's also been some marketing on the meat side in terms of pork is the other white meat and shit like that.
There
has been big money that's been pushing industrial food for the last. Basically since the early 1900s.
Yeah.
And, Sally Fallon is and Mary Enig have clearly documented that in their books and their writing. But what's different now, which I think is really important, is at the turn of the century in the 1900s, that marketing budget was being funded by, for the most part, private corporations. Now, we have all of these, state or quasi-state or partnership organizations that are working together with private corporations to market us shit that we don't need.
But
that's actually...
Not only that we don't need, but they're telling us we absolutely need.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Well, and in some cases, in the last few years, they've actually been passing laws forcing people to, it's not quite as common in the U.S. or in Canada yet, but in Europe, they're actually, banning the sale of grass-fed, regeneratively raised meat products now. And so I think this is actually, it's one of the biggest problems, but it's actually, part of permaculture, one of the style of kind of agriculture that I've studied under is the problem is the solution. And so when we look at it that way, the products that they're trying to sell us are so undesirable that it takes literally billions and billions of dollars of marketing and, basically corrupting the healthcare system, the doctors, the media, our legislature systems, laws, all these different things to try to force people into eating crickets. Or tofu, oatmeal, or whatever it is,
or lab meats,
right?
Right?
And so when you look at it that way, it's just like, man, they've been pushing this agenda for over 100 years now, it's really actually inspiring that they haven't got further, and it's actually a testament to, I think, the shittiness of the products that they're trying to offer and just the resilience of the kind of the human spirit and of not wanting to be forced.
Yeah.
So, but I think our key strategy in the regenerative movement is, which is, it's maybe will be very counterintuitive to a lot of people because, there's so many groups now that are clamoring for, funding. Government, we want funding,
yeah.
Give us grants, give us, And in a way that's like, yes, the government should be funding us. However, I think a better strategy is to say no funding for anybody. Let the free market decide.
I totally agree with you. Absolutely.
Let the free market decide. And that's actually, it's very, because if we are clamoring for the government dollars and just saying, no, give us the gun, to steal money away from other people, and because we're good, we have no right to say, when, you know, the government gives $1 billion to Cargill or some, you know, pea protein plant. I think the Canadian government gave, it was $100 million or something like that to some pea processing plant in Calgary to start making fake meat. And so the a much, like, the kind of Trump card, I think, is just...
Speaking of that, James Cameron's new Avatar's coming out. Okay. Don't watch it. Don't go there. You'll want to, don't.
Or if you do watch it with a critical eye to see, again...
Like, you'll see that greenwashing agenda in there,
But that's what's so funny about it, is like they're literally spending billions and billions of dollars to ram this down, to literally brainwash people into thinking that this is... And it's not working very well, or at least for most people. It's amazing that there's been, you know, people like you and I, and like we have a, you know, good community here in Alberta, and it's growing. Like,
yeah, Alberta's doing well. I'm pretty proud.
And I think it's growing, you know, with the you know, the lockdowns, and just seeing the massive overreach of the state in, you know, when it comes to our medical choices. This is people are starting to wake up from this.
Yeah.
So one thing that I try to really encourage farmers to do is we come at this from a, you know, a political and a rights angle, which is very counterintuitive, which is let's let the market decide. Mm-hmm. Because we can essentially catch them in a contradiction, because they claim to be doing this in terms of, well, this is what the public wants and it's better for health. Okay, well then let people decide.
Yeah.
Don't force us. Mm-hmm. And don't let us force you either. I don't want, you know, the Alberta government marketing grass-fed beef for people.
No, it's almost the last thing.
It's an
especially when they don't understand it and they're not. That's like giving the grant. So when you have like four different people vying for this one grant, and one is a wonderful regenerative rancher, farmer, what have you, the government isn't smart enough to understand what he's doing so correctly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, and so it's interesting, the White Oaks Farm in, I think it's Texas, Will Harris, I believe, he's doing some fantastic work down there.
Yeah.
He's an amazing guy. And he recently applied for, I saw on Instagram, he applied for some
got turned down, federal
grants.
Yeah.
And so he did this massive campaign just blasting, you know, that the US government had given money to, you know, Cargill and you know, the Gates Foundation, all these different things, but they wouldn't give money to him. But he never took it to the next step and said, this is a great example of why the government cannot be in charge of doling out money.
Yeah.
Because they will be bought.
Yeah.
And so the
well, that's what lobbying is.
It is.
It's just corruption.
And so if we really want to address, because if we look at, you know, regenerative ag as in isolation, it seems like a really complex, and how do we get at it? But when we start looking at these things, you know, and look for patterns amongst other industries, like the push for, solar panels all of a sudden, or like a green energy. Like, you know, a few years ago, it was like they're
electric cars.
Yeah, which is funny, because I'll give you another example of the insidiousness of the people who are running these kinds of agendas. It was in the middle of the Industrial Revolution. It was illegal to form a union,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right, right.
Because the big, you know, industry moguls, they didn't want people organizing, mm-hmm. because as one person who's, you know, making 5 cents a day, you know, shoveling coal, you had no influence.
Yeah.
But if you could get everybody in the factory, be like, this is really shitty. Like, let's all get together, let's go on strike, and let's use collective bargaining to get, you know, to get what we need. And so they made strikes illegal. They made strikes illegal, they made unions illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And like there were bloody, vicious battles. But at a certain point, and this is the critical piece here, at a certain point, the industry moguls realized, okay, we're not going to beat this. Like, they have morality and right on their side.
Right.
Like, there's no way, like, there's no justification for us to you know, kill them and beat them and force them, because they're not, we've said that we live in a free society, but we're essentially forcing them to be slaves, you know, through basically the company store model.
Yeah.
And so basically what they did is, well, if we can't beat them, let's join them. And so they...
And beat them from within.
And beat them from within. And so, so then all of a sudden unions were mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
How many industries is, you have to be part of a union.
Yeah.
And you cannot work as a free agent. And so, and then what do? They just corrupt the unions.
Yeah.
And they work from the inside. And so this is why the government needs to be separate from the economy for the same reason the government was separated from the church.
Church, absolutely.
Because it will corrupt, and you'll have people, as opposed to fighting in the free market for making better and better products, you'll have people fighting for basically the monopoly on force the government has. Yeah. Really looking at this from a principled perspective about politics, ethics, philosophy, and understanding from that way is really, it's a different way to look at it. But nobody wants to have that conversation.
Nobody wants to be uncomfortable whatsoever.
No,
and that's why we can't solve issues.
No, and,
right?
And so I'll give you another example of this is something I've never heard anybody else talk about. But in Canada here, we became a dictatorship. Just 6 months ago, when our prime minister passed the Emergency Measures Act because of the protests that were happening, because of the mandates that the truckers were basically being forced into getting vaccines. But what was really important about that is that it wasn't just the truckers. It was that if anybody who donated to the campaign of those truckers was also by implication considered a terrorist.
Yeah.
The key piece here is the government, it was retroactive.
Yeah.
The government passed a law, and then so people donated freely to a campaign that was totally legitimate. Then our government passed a law. They went back in time and charged people for a crime that was not a crime and seized their money, bank account. We became a dictatorship. No one said shit about it.
Oh, I know. You know what bothered me most was the people that were attacking the truck drivers now. I don't care. And anyway, it's a crime to be white anymore. So
it
you
is.
Know what went on there.
It is. Yeah.
Instead of looking at, let's just distract from the. Basically, they're fighting for our sovereignty, and that's what I'm calling myself now as a freedom fighter.
Yeah.
Like I'm fighting for our food, our human rights, all the rights that we're entitled to. That's what we need to fight for. We can't pick and choose. Mm-hmm. I might not agree with this right over here, but I've got to let it be, right?
Yeah, and that's where the basically mutual consent to mutual benefit should become enshrined in some form of constitution. Because if this is another great line from one of my favorite authors, Ayn Rand. She said if human rights trump property rights, it simply means that some humans have the right to make people property of others.
Wow.
And so we have this is another really misleading agenda, right? Is like in the same way that they, unions are banned. Well, now that you have to be a union. And then, so we'll step on people's human rights. And now all of a sudden everybody has to have human rights. But what has it done? It's divided everybody up, and it's all now so the indigenous people they've got certain rights.
And we're all,
there's billboards down the highway right now for this fall, vote for a Métis constitution. We're literally heading towards tribal war, where people are going to divide up amongst their group because this is what happens when we create a political system where individual rights, that's the only rights there are. There's only the rights of the individual. There are no group rights. And when we destroy individual rights, it forces individuals into groups for protection.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have tribal warfare.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like the jail system.
Yeah.
Right? When you're trapped,
yeah.
You got to find allies within your confinement that you're in within your jail,
for
right?
Protection. And of course, this is another example. This is where, these psychopathic, politicians and industry moguls, they want us because when we're afraid and fighting amongst each other, it's easy for them to organize and stay one step ahead of us. But when you really look back at these patterns, and this has literally been happening for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, where a select group of people are able to control an entire civilization and basically make them their slaves. And that's where we are right now.
Yeah. And we are slaves.
We are slaves, but it's even better than slavery because we're paying our own food
and we're shipping food into the jails for ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know that that's a big step away from just regenerative agriculture. But if we're in these silos And this is where I see a lot of my colleagues in this space who are trying to, they have the right goal, mm-hmm. but the means to that end, they're using will never achieve it because they're fighting for government subsidies and you know grants for women farmers versus it's like this is a race to the bottom, folks. Like yes,
yeah.
What has happened in our society against women and African Americans and indigenous is atrocious. But it wasn't atrocious because it happened to women or blacks or indigenous people. It was atrocious because it happened to individuals. And if we don't recognize that, we don't need women's rights.
Yeah, no, we just need human rights.
Individual rights. The smallest minority in the world is the individual.
True.
And so these are some examples of just the subtlety of looking at some of these problems from a principles perspective versus just being a regenerative agriculture. It is a really good thing. But if we grant ourselves the right to force other people to do what we think is right, what do we have to say against them doing the same to us?
Yeah.
And so and really what I'm proposing is if we want to achieve our regenerative agricultural goals, we have to do that first from a philosophical perspective. We have to understand what our approach is. And then the only thing we need to do is expand that approach. And politicians don't lead, they follow.
Well, they should follow.
Well, but
we don't do our part. We vote them in or not. They get in somehow.
Yeah.
And then we don't hold them to task.
Exactly.
Right? We don't. So that they can do whatever they want.
And so
the next horrible guy who's just a little bit less horrible than him or horrible in a different way can get in.
Yeah, well, and the left and the right play off of each other, but every time it just ratchets up.
Absolutely.
And so people need to take a hard look and really, these are not new ideas. People, some fantastic thinkers who've been talking about this stuff for over 100 years.
Yeah.
And they've recognized the problems and, the U.S. with their, War of Independence, like that was the closest kind of country to getting the style of society I think that we should live in. They made a few mistakes, mainly that they allowed government to continue to have play a role in the economy, and you played out over a long enough time, and if you give them an inch they'll take a mile.
Yeah.
And now that's where we're at. And so these are philosophical and political problems that we need to go to the roots, stop hacking at the branches of evil and go right to the root and start looking at some of these things. Because if we look out across the road, of my neighboring farms in this area, they're bulldozing forests, they're filling in wetlands, and they're getting carbon credits from the government.
I know.
So our taxpayer dollars are literally funding our destruction. And so if we just got rid of the subsidies, industrial agriculture wouldn't have a leg to stand on. But we don't need subsidies ourselves. We just need a free
market. Well, we've never had them, so maneuver with them.
But we are at a transition point where we're about to go from unions are banned to unions have to happen.
Yeah.
And so we're going to go from, industrial agriculture, well, we can't beat them, so we might as well join them. Everybody has to be regenerative.
Well, that's what we're... But
and they're going to ram it down
our
throats there.
Or we're having the greenwash.
Or the greenwash, which is exactly
all regenerative.
And so now there's going to be ESGs, in environmental social governance, and there's going to be laws about how many wetlands you have to have on your property. And we are about to, the good goals of regenerative farmers are about to be totally destroyed in the same way that, the women's rights movement and, the African-American, the civil rights and the unions, all those things were corrupted and turned into something that just furthered the agenda of these psychopaths.
Yeah.
And so we have to be really careful and get back to these principles.
And am I correct in semi remembering that you obviously just said it, but I had something in my head that you didn't like the term regenerative agriculture, but it wasn't that, it was that you didn't want the government or any kind of
certifications
because then again we're pigeonholed into certain, some people are complete, they would be 10 times better than this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then some would just be sneaking in just to be calling.
Yeah, and that was, there's pros and cons to it, but if you take a look at the organic certification movement, so my parents transition to organics in 1988,
right,
which is before the internet, before organics was a thing. Mm-hmm. And it actually meant something then.
Yeah.
There were very strict rules. It was a tight community. And in the last 30 some years, the organics has become a brand name,
mm-hmm,
that has been sought after, and it has been co-opted. And now you can use Roundup on organic farms, yeah, in the States, because people got together and they voted and they used all these different things. And they said, well, but we really need it. And as long as you're not spraying it on our crops, what if we just put it on the pathways next to the crops in our greenhouses, you know?
Yeah.
And they'll always be you know, think about grandma. Grandma in the retirement home, you know, you wouldn't want to hurt grandma. There'll always be some, you know, the emergency that justifies, you know, this style of racketeering that has just become so prevalent for people to achieve their agendas. And so this is why the principles of freedom and not allowing the use of force or fraud in our... So again, it's really simple. Everybody should be able to use whatever words they want.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody lies about them, you should be able to sue them.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's a ranch that you and I are both thinking about right now. That,
mm-hmm,
we won't reference their name, but I've heard many, many people...
If my head blows, you know, up, that's why.
Who have worked, you know, for that. And they're lying. So, but they could be... What certifier... If they brought a certifier and they walked through the factory, they would pass every check, you know?
Yeah.
Right? But they're still lying. And so the real thing is we need to have a proper legal system,
mm-hmm,
that is efficient and effective at dealing out justice, because right now it's just whoever has the better lawyer wins.
Yeah.
Because you can just file injunctions until you're...
Absolutely.
You know, the person who sued you goes bankrupt. And so they're untouchable. Again, how did that happen? Well, we slowly whittled away at the legal system until now we're in this place where, you know, I know people who have tried to go through the legal system for remedy, and it takes 10 years.
Yeah. And meanwhile, who's rich, yeah, now? The lawyers,
exactly,
and everybody else.
So these are systemic problems, and I don't want to be, you know, like everybody else in my generation, which is just burn it all down and start over. Like there's a lot of
cancel it.
There are a lot of good things in our society, but there's also a lot of mistakes that have happened. And coming back to the Emergency Measures Act, we became a dictatorship completely legally.
Yeah.
So it was not a bug, it was a feature. It was designed into the system from the start. We need to go back and pull that bug out,
yeah,
and rewrite
restart
the code. Because it was not a mistake. They did everything by the books. So we need to change the books. And this coming back to the regenerative agriculture stuff is let's go deeper. Is there some root principle behind all of this that would do away with all of the greenwashing, you know, the you know, mandates that are forcing people to do, you know, medical experiments against their will, you know, forcing us to pay for our own destruction of our ecosystems by these farmers who are literally, I've gone to conferences where they look at the profit and loss of these farms. They're making a good year is like $10 an acre. You know, I'm making hundreds of dollars per acre net profit every year. Without any government, well, it's not true. I do take a lot of government subsidies because I believe that's my, it's not grants through, it's restitution.
Yeah, yeah.
But even without that, I'd still be profitable. But if the only reason that's keeping them afloat is because the government is paying them through all these different backdoor things and carbon credits and exemptions and grants and stuff like that to upgrade their stuff. It's billions of dollars. Yeah. So let's level the playing field. And this would have to take place over, you know, several years so we don't all starve to death.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But that has to be the goal. And there's no politicians who are talking about that. I went to a meeting the other day about the Alberta Prosperity Project.
Right.
You know, and if you read their stuff, they're just saying, give us the gun. You know, give us the power to tax the people and write the laws and control everything. But trust us, we'll be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. We need a government of laws and not of men, because if it's a government of men, the men will create the laws that suit them.
Yes, absolutely. And it's happened since the dawn of time.
It's
and it didn't even, it not even government, you know, the very beginning, mostly when we saw the first bit of horrificness was religion, was through the church.
Exactly. Well, and this is what I find so funny, because when you start talking about these kind of, you know, global conspiracies, people, nobody could be that organized. Nobody could be that. It's just like, have you studied history? You know, Genghis Khan, Caesar, Napoleon, Hitler. These were people whose stated goal was to take over the world, or at least their corner of it.
Yeah.
And some of them got pretty damn close to it.
Absolutely.
And they were highly organized. And so, and they did that before smartphones, before we all had.
I was wondering, I don't even know how I drove before.
But Hitler took over half the world with pen and paper.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, you know, we're getting more stupid with technology, right? Yeah. Technology is, instead of bringing us together, it's making us absolutely vicious opponents of each other.
And that's one of the
And I'm to blame. I'm guilty. Absolutely guilty.
So coming back to the taking over the world thing is like, People will dismiss that. So that's just a conspiracy. Nobody's looking. Nobody wants to do that. Well, ever since the dawn of man and civilization, there have been people who have tried to take over everything, and that's been their stated goal. So you think those people just disappeared? No, they've just gotten better at making, you know, sheep costumes to put over their, you know, wolfish bodies, and now we've got people like, you know, Klaus Schwab and at the World Economic Forum, who is literally, he wrote a book about how he plans to take over the world, his whole game plan. And instead of it being treated with disgust, it's literally the adopted policy of the vast majority of the governments on Earth today.
I've even seen people that claim to be in our community thinking that that's still an okay organization.
Why? Because they use the buzzwords.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, absolutely.
And sustainability and you know, the big one that they're going after now is equity. You know, fairness and you know, environmental social governance. And again, who decides what's fair?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And yeah. So when you really look at their listen, just they're telling us what their plan is right now, but if we as a movement in the regenerative community keep hacking at these branches of evil, they're you know, years ahead of us right now. 2030, that's their plan. By 2030, you'll own nothing, you'll be happy. We have to think long term, long range, and have clear goals and make plans. Because to fight against something is not enough. We have to know what we're fighting for. And it has to be more than just, you know, clean air and clean water.
Good food. It's the whole package.
Yeah.
It's the whole package. So, you know, I forget sometimes when I'm even in my own groups that we've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
But we forget that somebody who's just coming off maybe veganism or they want more sustainable agriculture, even our talk right now would just be, we may as well be doing some Chinese here. So when I took the 4-month break from social media and came back and decided maybe I'm just done with ethical omnivore movement, I slogged it out for 10 years. I said what I had to say. Maybe I'm just done. I've said it all, right? Because I found myself having those same conversations over and over again and not really having them be effective. Mm. And, you know, and when I was fighting against the vegans, people are starting to follow me just because of that. And then, you know, so I had to really, I had to recalibrate.
You're the cage fighter. Yeah.
I really was the cage fighter. And to this day, you know, I've had people that I fought with now come to me asking me to help them fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they know.
Yeah.
But I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
I want to fight. And I've always wanted to fight with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a talent, it is community building, right? It is gathering people. But I turn into a shitty leader myself, right? Because of the way the world is. I was reactionary. I was vicious. I was one-sided. I was biased. I was all of the things that I want to fight against, to be honest with you. And so now, back to the social media, I have got to come up with answers for people. Tangible, small first steps that aren't overwhelming, because somebody could listen to us talk about this and say, okay, I don't even understand what I should do next.
Yeah.
You know, and I do tell people, just find your local farmer. I'm finally building that directory.
Mm-hmm.
But finding your local farmer isn't enough without really knowing why you're looking for this local farmer and what you're doing for the big picture. Because we have to do more than just eat well. We have to live well. We have to fix the governments of the world, right?
And this is the funny thing is, like, I know dozens of regenerative farmers who eat shitty food.
Oh.
Like they're working so hard that they don't even have time to look after themselves.
Yeah.
But that piece is, you know, when I first got into Regen Ag and the stuff is, I felt so guilty for you know, having to charge the price that I needed to charge to make it viable for me.
Yeah.
But when I got to a certain point where I was like, well, hold on a second, like, I'm not competing on a level playing field. Like, I literally had people like scream at me or you know, just, I used to do farmers markets and just like, oh, you want that much for it? Like just awful things. And it's like, yeah, well, sure, you can go buy 99 cent a dozen eggs from the grocery store, but like, that's not their true cost.
Yeah.
Like
you should be alarmed cheap.
All of our taxpayer dollars have been keeping them at a dollar. And so when somebody sees my prices, this is another example of like why so many, one of your goals for the conversation were, how do we attract more people, both consumers and farmers into this space, is again, end the subsidies. Mm-hmm. Get rid of them. Because if consumers actually had to pay the real price, or if they could see, oh, why did my water bills go up this year again? Well, you know why? Because they had to build a new water treatment plant because they're trying to filter out all the runoff and the you know, the agricultural runoff and the pesticides and herbicides, and they don't get all of it. Or why did grandma get cancer and it cost $1 million? And who's paying for that? We have a free healthcare system, right? Like, all these things are connected. If you had tallied all up, those dozen eggs are 10 times more money than mine, and they taste like shit.
Yeah. And the chickens are just
no
creature on earth should have that kind of a life.
Exactly. And so if we got rid of the subsidies, the consumers would have to see the real cost of what that food is.
Absolutely.
We would be the cheap producers on the market,
mm-hmm.
and they would flock to us and we would be profitable and we would attract people into the marketplace. But instead, it's the farmers that get browbeaten into charging, you know, $7 or $10 a dozen for their eggs and make you feel guilty for it.
Yeah.
When they can't even afford to eat their own food. So I literally know farmers who sell their meat and then they buy shitty quality meat because they can't afford to eat their own food.
Well, how many farmers, you know, do we know that have to do another job?
Or work off farm, yeah.
Yeah, work off farm. Lots of them.
Yeah.
You know.
I'll tell you one more story that just blew my mind. So I was in the process of trying to get financing for a new piece of property that I'm buying. Expanding out the farm, and
so I remember talking to you about that a couple of years ago, and you're like, "No, we're good enough." I'm glad to hear that.
So I thought, well, you know, there's all these, you know, quasi corporate and government organizations that are designed to help young farmers get financing for agricultural loans, and so I thought, well, I'm gonna make use of it, right? And because even though my motto about these grants and these stuff is I completely disagree with it, and so it is my responsibility to denounce it, to bite the hand that's and then take the food,
right?
And that's the true way, because it's not a grant, it's restitution. It's the government is paying me back my own money,
mm-hmm.
and the damages that they've done as a result of me having to live in a slave society. So I thought, great, I'm about to spend a huge amount of money buying a piece of land. I'm going to go to AFSC and FCC, which are the, you know, Farm Credit Canada, mm-hmm. and I can't remember the acronym for AF. It's basically the AFSC is like a organization. It's a private organization that has a mandate from the government to lend money to farmers. So like they literally, so I can get lower interest rates by going to these organizations. So I went to them and I said, hey, like I've got this, you know, great business. We're super profitable. We're looking to expand. I'd like a loan to buy more land. And they said, oh, great. So like, what kind of grain are you going to grow? I said, no, actually, we're you know, we're grass-fed. We direct market all of our meat. And so like, yeah, I've got this quarter across the road that they want, the neighbors want to sell it to me. I our farm is right here. We can just expand right in. It's perfect. Like, here's my business plan. And they said, oh, so like, well is it pasture land? No, it's grain land. Oh, no. You see, because like grain land, it's worth like in your area $5,000 an acre, but pasture land's only worth $2,500 an acre. And so if you want to get a loan for grain land and then convert it into pasture, you'd actually be lowering the value of the land. And so we'd only be able to loan you on the $2,500 per acre. So I said, so I want to buy $1 million piece of land, but you'd only loan me $500,000. And then I have to come up with, so I have to come up front with $500,000 to buy this and still get a mortgage, $500,000 down payment to buy this quarter section of land. But I said, like I'm more profitable than, like I can yeah. show it. Like I'm they're making, you know, negative money per acre. Right. I'm making hundreds of dollars per acre. Like, yeah, but see, it's based off of the average price of land and the. And I just kind of smiled and I said, "Oh, I said, okay, it's okay." I just, because she was apologizing to me, because she could see the insanity of it all. So, but this is the terrible irony: is my farm is profitable. Mm-hmm. My profits are stolen from me at the point of a gun, because if I don't pay them, I'll go to jail.
Yes.
So I run a profitable farm. The government takes my money and they pay it to a unprofitable farmer.
Yeah.
And then they also use it to pay people like this lady and this whole organization to run programs that are supposed to help me. And if you go to their website, if I go to AFSC's website, look at the beautiful icons of the young farmers and the cows, and they'll even pay for your, it's all bullshit. And when I went in, it was like, so I said, like, here, like, it says on your website, you'll do all these things. Yeah, but really, it's like, what kind of canola do you want to grow? As this is insane. And so walking away from it, I realized, like, I'm literally paying for my own destruction.
Yes.
And exactly. I can't even use the services that I'm paying for. And so coming back, how do we fix this?
Yes. How do we?
Defund it all.
But how do we get to that point?
Well, so the way we get to it is you have to learn, you have to educate yourself, and you have to understand how we got to this place. And there are some really great economists like, you know, Thomas Sowell or Ayn Rand, they're two of my favorite authors, that go into this stuff in depth about the all these misconceptions that we've been taught and brainwashed into thinking, like, you know, like price fixing or minimum wage laws. These are things that are like, they are dogmatic things. They're good. Having minimum wage laws are good. They're terrible. When you actually look at the long-term history of what it costs, and it does more harm to the people that they're designed to protect, mm-hmm. all these things. And so I had to, in the same way that I was a vegan at one point, I had to deprogram myself from that.
Well, I was too.
And you were too. And, yeah. And so this is another one of those things where we have to deprogram ourselves from the brainwashing that has been forced on us from our, you know, our 10,000 hours of indoctrination. It's 10,000 hours to go from kindergarten to grade 12.
10,000 hours.
10,000 hours.
Of indoctrination.
Yeah. That's without university. You go through university.
That's okay. Advanced indoctrination.
That's advanced indoctrination. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. That's how you become an indoctrinator.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's your ticket to indoctrinate.
You get to pull,
others.
You get
yeah.
to pull the shock cards.
Yeah. You can. You too can make people as miserable as you are. Yeah.
Good little sadists. Yeah.
So, but even scaling it back further, if you didn't know me, and I came to you and I said, Dakota, yep. I'm a vegan, uh-huh. and I'm not happy with my health, and I have a slight suspicion it's not sustainable agriculture that I'm supporting. Uh-huh. Where do I start? What do I do to help myself?
Yeah. So my motto for our farm is heal yourself, heal the planet. But it's also heal the planet, heal yourself. Like, mm-hmm. these are it's kind of a chicken or an egg situation where you, but I believe that it starts with yourself in healing your own self and getting strong, because mm-hmm. because you can't pour from an empty cup.
No.
And so start there until you're strong enough to you know, you're not dealing with health problems, because so many people are dealing with just, and I was myself for years. I almost died from, you know, basically kidney and liver failure and shit.
Oh yeah,
and,
well, look at my recent battle, yeah. you know, and everybody too is got some form of not just physical illness, but mental illness.
Yeah,
like we were talking earlier about, you know, post-COVID, we all are dealing with a form of PTSD from it.
Yeah.
And so it's worldwide.
Yeah. So there's two things. One is, like, if you have, you know, physical health problems, deal mm-hmm. with those first.
Yes,
get strong.
I agree.
But then it comes to, like, the mental health stuff, and you know, you're probably gonna do both at the same time. But the mental health stuff is this is something that I had to learn the last couple years, really, and I've been slowly edging my way towards it, but I literally was at a point in my life where I felt guilty for being alive. I hated myself. You know, I was, you know, borderline suicidal at one point in my life because I bought into all the, again, if you truly believe that humans are inherently bad and we're a plague on the earth, like David Attenborough and all these great environmentalists have said, right, are, if you believe that, the only thing available to you is to kill yourself.
Exactly. Like because all that, these people.
Because that's what
population control. Well, have at it. Here's, yeah, you know, yeah, start with yourself.
And that's you know, that's the way it should be. But that, like, I, from a mental health perspective, I felt guilty for being alive. And so how are you going to fight for something when you feel like you don't have the right to fight for it, if, yeah, you don't feel you're worthy of it? And so you have to gain your self-esteem back. And this is where, you know, the stuff about, like, philosophy and if you were to read one author, it would be, my favorite author is Ayn Rand. She has taught me more about, you know, philosophy and economics and everything else in my own self than anybody else I've ever read. Yeah. We have to know that we have the right to fight for ourselves and the right to, because if we don't, and coming back to the control piece, you were talking about, you know, everyone has PTSD and stuff like that. And it's true to a certain perspective, and like that there's a lot of fear.
Well, that's what it is.
And people talk a lot about the fear, but there's another thing that is more powerful than fear, because as any good slave master knows, no matter how much you beat a slave or an animal, the animal, you know, as soon as you turn your back on them, they'll get you. You know, yeah, there's far more slaves, there's far more animals than, and so the way that you, or like if you're trying to train an elephant, same thing. You can't, there's two ways to do it. You either get the slave or the animal to believe that they deserve to be governed, that they, mm-hmm, deserve to be a slave, that they're guilty of it, and that you have a right over them, or you do it through mutual consent, mutual benefit, mm-hmm, and it's animal husbandry. It's actually an exchange. It's a relationship, and so guilt is far more powerful than fear when, yeah, it comes to controlling people. And what do we look at when we see the agendas? Just look at any single climate change movie or even businesses these days. What do? It's just flashes of skinny polar bears and rainforest deforestation.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, it's just feel guilty, buy our shit. Again, what does religion do? You know, original sin.
You're a sinner. You know, yeah, the original sin. You don't even have a choice. You're just born with sin.
You don't even have a choice, right? And so it's one of my other favorite authors, Christopher Hitchens, said, he's paraphrasing, I can't remember the other fellow's name, but he called it the Holy Trinity, mm-hmm, of religion, which was self-righteousness, self-hatred, and self-pity. And so it's what do we see in today's environmental movement? It's the same self-righteousness,
yeah,
self-hatred, and self-pity. But where that came from a religious perspective is we were told that we were created in the image of God, mm-hmm, so we're self-righteous. But we're told that we're sinners, and that we're irredeemably sinners.
Yes.
So we have self-hatred. Mm-hmm. And the self-pity comes from, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
Because we were created, yeah, sick and commanded to be well. And so that is a truly evil doctrine that was started by religious people for the purpose of controlling, yes, their slaves. It has now been adopted by the environmental movement. How do you make yourself feel better? You denounce yourself as disgusting and evil and immoral, mm-hmm, and then you scream and yell and point at everybody else around you,
yeah,
and that's how you gain self-esteem. And so we need to shake off these shackles of guilt and the fear. The fear is an easier one, because when you just come for a farm tour, you're like, holy shit, like this food is amazing. Like the fear is easy. The guilt took me years to get, yeah, over. And it wasn't until I got to the point where it's like, I have a right to live. I love myself. I want to be alive as long as possible. Then I became a force to be reckoned with.
You are a force to be reckoned with.
And when we, yeah, get more people who aren't, you know, I don't want to say cowards, but who don't, you know, in the back of their mind, well, do I really deserve to live? It's like, you can't have any.
Yeah, and I came to the same conclusion. It's not so much cowardice, it's truly that. And you just, it was a light bulb moment for me just now, because I was trying to piece that together. It really is. I don't deserve it. I don't deserve it. I'm an evil human, and now I'm an evil white human. Right? I'm going to go there. I'm sorry. Good. I'm sick of it lately.
It is.
You know?
It's right. Again, it's... The we see this double speak of the only way that you can be not racist is to be racist. Right? You have to debut, in the 1960s, you know, Martin Luther King said, you know, he wanted to see a world. His dream was to have a world where a man would be judged not by the color of his skin, but the content of his character. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, we don't give a shit about your it's where do you put your dick?
Right.
Like, that's it. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Who do you have sex with? What's your victim badge?
Yeah.
And they don't matter. And but what is that self-righteousness, self-hatred, and self-pity? I believe, with very good evidence, both historically and contemporary, is that we are being controlled to be somebody else's slave. Mm-hmm. And if that drives you mental, channel it into heal yourself, both physically, mentally. And once you become strong, you will be a magnet, a light that will attract other people to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I even said to you, just I had to step away because I was a detriment now to the movement, because I was also full of hatred, fear, pain, guilt. And I had to heal myself. And now I am a force to be reckoned.
Exactly. And there's another quote from Rand that I just thought of now, is that one reason is better than 10 insults.
Mm. Yes.
You know? Yeah. And so, you know, before people go, and for me, like, I spent thousands and thousands of hours researching this stuff before I ever was able to articulate myself. And like, you know, don't be the person, like, if you're passionate about this stuff, don't be the person that just wants to go out and just start, you know, brawling and, you know, it doesn't work. It doesn't.
No. When was the last time any of us got forced into doing something? It's gotta be a heart change, right? Yeah. That's why for me, sorry to interrupt. For me, one of the first things, it worked for me when I was a vegan. But I did it because of yoga. So I wasn't really, all the animals, you know, I've always been an animal lover, but that kind of wasn't it. And it wasn't even, weirdly, it wasn't even because I thought meat was bad. It was just this peer pressure, yoga, you know, that kind of thing. I don't even know where I was going with it. We'll have to edit that one out.
No worries. You were talking about the...
elderly. You're talking to an elderly person.
No worries.
So what I was going to say is when I was off of veganism, what had to happen for me, well, my naturopath at the time said, you know, I got in a car accident. He goes, you either start eating some meat or please don't come back to me. Because I was struggling. I was vegan because of just trying it out.
Yeah.
And then I got into a bad car accident and I wasn't healing and I had a bit of a head injury, but not a bad enough one. And I was depressed and, you know, and all I had to do was eat some meat. And so he introduced me to the farm that he went to, and it was just love at first sight.
Yeah.
I didn't want to leave the farm. I would do anything to see these people succeed.
Yeah.
And I think that's what everybody has to do, no matter what you're eating.
Yeah.
Go and meet these people and see what you're supporting and why. Yeah,
exactly.
And hear their philosophies, and just like this, you know, be intimate with your people who give you life, quite literally.
And that's my, in the same way that, you know, one reason is better than, you know, 10 insults, I believe that, you know, nobody wants to join your revolution if it sucks. It's like, if we're all whipping ourselves for being, you know, these polluting, you know, scabs on the planet, nobody wants to be part of that. But if it's like, you get to eat food like this, you know, like everything, almost everything on this plate came from our farm.
Oh, yeah.
And
I can hardly wait to eat again.
And it's like, you can't get flavors like this. This is, you know, 6 month old, you know, raw cheese that we made.
You make this?
This is some of our cheese. This is some of our... all these sausages have 10, 15% organ meats in them, liver, kidney, heart, spleen. These are lacto-fermented vegetables. That's, you know, liver plate. This is some of my home-smoked Saskatoon wood-smoked bacon. It's literally salt and Saskatoon wood and our pork. Like, you can't buy this food in the store.
I've got that bacon.
but that's...
I might tell everybody with my mouth full. Dakota supplies me with pork and beef, so I know this stuff.
Yeah. But like this is the way you convince people. It's just like,
and I agree with you too. It's got to happen in person. It can't be a theory.
No.
Or conjecture.
No.
Right.
But the coming back to what I was saying about, you know, if people want to make change, you have to. It takes time. You know, we're in this culture now where it's like, you know, all the minutes, the video's 10 minutes, I don't want to watch it.
I do it myself. I don't know about that 10 minutes.
And it's just like, you know, our goal is to you know, create heaven here on earth. I don't care how long it takes. Like, if it takes the rest of my life, it takes, you know, 10 more generations, it doesn't matter. That's the only goal, is to make this world as good as it can be.
And I swore I wasn't going to talk about vegans, but I'm not anymore talking about individual vegans. I'm talking about the movement.
Yeah.
That's how they run. They run, I can't believe it's as big as it is, because it's guilt, fear, you know, shame, all of it, especially human hating, you know, a species. Yeah, talk about speciesism. I don't even know how to pronounce that word. But hate your own species. It's ludicrous. And as soon as you can love yourself and heal yourself, you start to find the people like you that you also love.
Yeah.
Right? And then you become part of a community that is uplifting.
Yeah. And then you won't settle.
No, you won't.
You won't settle for the trash, you know, the dollar a dozen eggs, or the, you know, the 80 cent pound sausages when they're on discount.
No.
Like, you can't eat it anymore, because it's gross. And the same thing will happen with your people and your ideas. And like, I try to watch, I can't watch the news anymore, or TV, because it's just disgusting to me. It's just, I can't handle it.
No, I can't either.
And so, but that takes time. And so give yourself, you know, it took me probably 5-10 years when I woke up and I realized like something wasn't right in my life, and like I was going downhill to where I'm actually feel like I'm moving in a good direction, and I'm wake up every morning and I'm happy to get it. Like, that took a long time. And so we don't feel bad if it's not like you seeing you know, benefits in I think there's ways to fast track. I mean, you were just talking about, you know, your own, you know, personal journey of taking, you know, just a few months of being able to process stuff. And like, that's great. There's healers out there.
Yeah. But I was at rock bottom.
Yeah.
So, you know, even my therapist said to me, you know, usually this takes 10 sessions. I accomplished it in 5.
Wow,
because I wanted to do the work. Yeah. I was so sick.
Yeah.
That I went right in there and got her done. And my whole life changed, right? Everything was different. How I deal with people in an ordinary day, right?
Yeah.
It's different because I've got my shit together a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I want our species to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, we are part of nature. Mm-hmm. We are, like, we are this earth. We are the, you know, speaking of dominion, we have dominion. We do, but what are we gonna do with it? And it's not bad that we have it. You know, something has to have it. There will be an apex predator on any planet, on any, you know, solar system. We just happen to be it here. And we've just abused it. We've abused it really seriously with the planets, every species, including our own.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm out to find real solutions for people this year, not just talking and reiterating and sharing. Yeah. I want to create ethical omnivore hubs, start to do that, not to do great things, just so people can connect face to face like you and I are now, and go out and do things. You're not going to do it on your computer.
No.
You're going to do it in person where you live and with the people you know and the farmers you can literally go and visit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll stress, and I think it's a great idea, but can you imagine if those hubs were getting together and they were talking about things, you know, like politics, philosophy, the legal system, tax, and it's like, that's how we're going to get power and really understanding the current system. And because again, like there's this massive movement that started called the Alberta Prosperity Project, and there's a ton of good people in it. But if you read their documents, like you're just meet the new boss, same as the old boss, mm-hmm. kind of shit. And in my mind, it's very simple. It's like people don't think that ideas and principles matter. It's like, you can say one thing and do another. It's like, you can't do that. No. You have to have, and you have to be passionate about ideas and principles to do that. But when you get into a group, you don't have the, and this is a whole other, you know, part of our brainwashing has stemmed from the progressive nursery schools, where, you know, children are taught not to learn but just to play and to get along together, and the whole, like, you know, the Austrian educational system, which was basically how to create good soldiers. Like, mm-hmm. we have literally been you know, through all these different ideas, you know, collectivism is one, or altruism. We have no idea how unchallenged assumptions in our mind, or principles that we have been just beaten into us, that we've accepted, that go on to dictate decisions in our day-to-day lives. Yeah. And so this takes a lot of introspection. You can't introspect in a group. You can only really do it by yourself. But once you do that and become strong in yourself, then when two strong individuals get together and they start to form a, then they're unstoppable. But if we just gather as a herd, then one asshole can just come along and just lead us all off the cliff.
Yeah. So you're right. You're right.
That's another just a subtle thing that I'll point out. Like, the communities are super important, but or they'll organize into a mob and then incite us to do whatever their agenda is. And this, I just want to say this, is that I think a lot of people get so overwhelmed by these movements because they think it's so hopeless, because the strategy that they're using is hopeless. Like, you're never going to get anywhere. If you're hacking at branches for 20 years, mm-hmm. and meanwhile they just keep sending more shoots up, you got to go down deeper.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
And when you find that route, like, now that I've seen the route, it's just like, I just got to wait for enough people to come along so we can pull this thing out.
Yeah.
I can't do it by myself, because if I don't pay my taxes, I just go to jail and nobody says anything.
No.
But if we get a couple hundred thousand people together that are like, this is fucking insane. We are literally paying money for all these programs to build our own prison and to pay the guards who are going to abuse us besides.
Yeah.
No. And when we get enough people together that will say that and mean it and will not take no for an answer, that's when the root comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
But more often than not is that people don't want to do that, or they want to, you know, they don't want to make a stand because they've been brainwashed that to, you know, there's no such thing as black and white, there's only gray. And again, what a useful thing to teach your slaves is to never pass judgment on what's right or wrong.
Well, we're seeing it right now.
This is hard work, but
Look at how successful you were. I don't know if anybody, you know, well, I know a lot of people from Alberta, but worldwide, how successful you were getting on-site slaughter approved. So how did that come about?
That was basically, I said no, and I got a bunch of other people to say no with me. Mm-hmm. And the short story is, you know, because I believe that it's immoral to torture animals before you kill them, mm-hmm. And it's also bad for your health, because then all that, the stress hormones are in their meat, and it doesn't taste as good. And so I did a bunch of research and found that it was better by doing my own experience of harvesting animals on farm versus taking them to an abattoir where, you know, they're not in good conditions. Right. And I realized, like, this is a better way to do it for many reasons. Mm-hmm. I want to do that. I educated my customers. They also agreed that they wanted to do it. But there's this, the government had made it illegal. Why did they make it illegal? Well, for your safety.
Yes.
Right? You didn't say, why is raw milk illegal in Canada? You can buy it in most of the states. It's for your own protection. Yeah. It's bad for you. It just so happens that we, nothing to do with the fact that we have a milk monopoly that the government makes all this money off of. No, nothing to do with that. And so the meat stuff is the same thing, is that probably 20 years ago, some big packing plant, you know, sent one of their boys in to talk with somebody in the government and said, you know, there ought to be a law, you know, that would protect people from ever, you know, someone could get salmonella or E. coli, so we should have inspected whatever it was. And of course, there's a law that gets passed, and 20 years go by, and so anyways, it's legal for me to kill my own animal, take it to a butchering plant, and have the animal brought back to my family, and feed it to my family. And the same way you can harvest the deer and take that to a butcher shop. And so I figured, well, what if I created an agreement where I sell my customers a live animal, I rent them land, and I raise their animal on their land, so I can, they're just a producer, just like
yeah.
I did that for probably 5 years. Eventually, somehow the government found out about it. They like hacked into my website or something, or I don't know what they did, but they came with like, you know, screenshots of you know, the backs, you know, site protected passwords and stuff from my,
wow,
from my website. Unless one of my customers turned it, which I can't imagine.
I can't see that.
Anyways, they came and they said, yeah, so you're violating the Meat Inspection Act of Alberta, which comes with a $10,000 fine and potentially a year in prison. We're gonna have to ask you to stop. And I said, actually, I'm not violating the law. Read it again. Here's all my contracts that I have with my customers. And the guy was just like, holy crap, you know, he's like, between you and me, I think what you're doing is better, but I'm just doing my job. And but he couldn't really touch me. Instead, he went to my butcher and he threatened to shut my butcher down, because he had to falsify some documents to make it look like that he wasn't, you know, butchering all these animals on my farm alone. Anyways, we had shut down. I had to do it on my own for a couple of years, but eventually the government passed Jason Kenney was looking for votes or something, and so he created this cut red tape initiative, which is where any Albertan could write into the government and submit a law that they would like to see cut, which is just hilarious. It's like, again,
I'd like to take this moment to say bye, Jason Kenney.
So yeah, they created this cut red tape initiative, and one of my customers told me about it. So I sent the newsletter list to my email list with a couple thousand people on it. And I said, okay, everybody, go to this website, copy and paste this into these boxes and hit send. It'll take like 5 minutes of your time. And I don't know how many people did it, but
I did it.
It was enough that they literally like copied and pasted my own stuff into the law. And within 6 months, it was legal again.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So, and again, this is another great example of like, you know, the governments, politicians follow mm-hmm. when someone else leads. And we need to lead. And that was a really, and there was big pushback. Like I wasn't part of the meetings where they were deciding the laws, but my butcher was there, they were throwing my name around, and there was, you know, big packing plants that were just furious about it because they thought we were going to cut into their market. And so we can change the system. Unfortunately, I know what I know now, and I would like to come back and fight the law again, because they didn't change things. It's just a bunch more bureaucratic red tape. And I'd like to take another stab at it to get it tweaked again. And also the raw milk thing. I think we could definitely do.
I think we should talk more about that another time.
These are great initiatives. Like if anything to organize around these principles is like a food sovereignty and just sovereignty in general. It's just like, it is insane that an adult can't decide. You know, they legalize marijuana or drugs or whatever.
I made a meme about that. You know, it's pretty bad when my marijuana dealer has to raise funds to get my raw milk dealer out of jail, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, this fighting from this from a principal's perspective about freedom and sovereignty, is if you don't actually own your own body, then you're not free. Mm-hmm. And if you can't decide what to put into your own body, you certainly don't own it. Especially when somebody else can decide what to put into your body.
Yeah, well,
without your consent. And that's the total double standard. So focusing on those contradictions and understanding and going for the jugular on those things with a group of people behind you, that's where you can make change.
Yeah.
It's a big topic to wrap your head around. But when if we realize that we can stop hacking at the branches and tiring ourselves out, and just take a step back, look at the whole thing, and just be like, oh, like all that is just like these two little
roots.
These two little things.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's easy.
Yeah, let's get them.
Get everybody else out of the trees and like
get them into the roots.
Let's go for the roots, folks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And this thing is done. It's really not that overwhelming.
That's the thing, you know. When you're people like yourself and I, you actually see a very clear solution. It's so maddening.
It is.
It's so maddening. You're just like, come on, guys, this will work. This will work.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, you know. And again, back to supporting those of us who are willing to literally get our knuckles bloody, please do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I think I want to eat this food.
Yeah, it's been tempting us for a while.
Yeah. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again to Coda. Give me a hug in camera.
My pleasure.
I love you, buddy.
I love you too, Anna.
All right.
Let's try again.
I hope you gained some actionable insights from this podcast about how you can fight the powers that shouldn't be by building your own homestead. If you did, please take the time to share this episode and click all those buttons to like, rate, and follow. This helps spread our message, it makes sure that you never miss an episode, and it sends a middle finger to globalists like Klaus Schwab. I also suggest that you sign up to my newsletters directly on my websites that are in the show notes. With the Government of Canada recently passing Bill C-11, the Online Streaming Act, the threat of me being censored or removed from mainstream media platforms like this one is becoming a reality. If that time ever comes, we can stay connected. Thanks again for listening, and take care until next time.